suspend the rules?
Before you do, Mayor?
Yep.
Yes. They can't close without our action. They don't need a presentation. They
just need a close. We're going to do two quick items. No, you're first, okay. Madam Auditor. And I apologize for those of you that have to wait. You're welcome to move around the plane, as it were, and use the restrooms outside in the hall. This will probably take how long?
Well, we've asked for 20 minutes. We'll go as quickly as we can. And I know you're cramped and busy and all that good stuff.
I should read the title first.
Yes. Please read the title.
Because we're waiting for the auditor to actually get here now.
Item 388, accept the audit of the comprehensive annual financial report of the city for fiscal year ended June 30, 2010, and the related communications with those charged with governance letter.
Good afternoon. LaVon Griffin, Vlade City Auditor. Nice to see you all here. Here with me is Drummond Kahn, who's the director of the Audit Services Division in my office. And soon to be sitting on his right will be Jim Lanzarotta from Moss Adams LLP, which is the external firm hired to conduct the annual audit of the city's financial statements. So Moss Adams LLP has completed the financial audit of the comprehensive annual report, which is better known as the CAFR, for fiscal year 2009-10. And has delivered an unqualified opinion, and that is a good thing. This is a clean opinion that the city's basic financial statements present fairly in all material aspects the financial position of the city and its component units as of June 30th, 2010. This means that readers of the CAFR may have reasonable assurance that the transactions and balances reported in the CAFR are presented free of material misstatement. However, during the audit, Moss Adams did find some areas of concern which are outlined in the report and which Mr. Lanzarotta will explain in more detail. Before turning the presentation over to Jim, Drummond will briefly discuss the role of audit services and the statutorily required work.
Thank you. I am Drummond Kahn, the Director of Audit Services in the Office of the City Auditor. As LaVon mentioned, the city is required to have an independent audit of the financial statements every year. This audit allows the city to comply with state requirements and even helps the city do things like issue bonds by letting outside lenders understand that the financial statements are presented correctly. Under the rules and law, a licensed municipal audit firm has to conduct the audit. Our management of this audit allows the city a double arm's length independence between the outside auditors and the city financial managers who they audit. Our audit services division is part of the independently elected city auditor's office, and we have no reporting or management relationship with any other part of city government. We retain a professional staff with experience in accounting and auditing who manage this outside contract with an independent licensed municipal audit firm. So Jim Lanzarotta, a partner in the firm of Moss Adams, will now present the results of this firm's independent audit.
Jim. Well, good afternoon. I need to kind of catch my breath. We're trying to also have a meeting, and a meeting is going on right now with several members of each of your bureaus and representatives of Moss Adams and Technical Accounting and the Auditor's Office, kind of having a debrief about what went well with the audit, what could be improved upon, issues that came up, and so forth. So anyway, I'm running between meetings here today. But I really appreciate LaVon. I know this is the second year now that she has requested some of your time to present the audit directly to you. We really appreciate the opportunity to present the audit directly to you. I'm hopeful that you will get a report from management on exactly what does this document mean? What does it tell you? Because truly, this is a report card of the financial condition of the city and the trends financially under your leadership. So it'd be really important to know what it means. I know that from a fund perspective and a budgetary perspective, that's where you live day in and day out. So I know your focus is in the budgetary financial statements and the fund statements. You continue to get a really excellent bond rating. So the credit rating agencies like what they see in your financials. But there is a government-wide set of financial statements on a full accrual basis, kind of like commercial enterprises, that also tells a story from a longer-term perspective. And I'd like to put in a plug for the auditor's office. I know they're working on what I think they're calling a sustainability report which will tell you some of the, may answer some of your questions about a longer-term perspective of the city's financial statements. And I've met with them to talk about some of the benchmarks and things they'll be reporting to you. And I understand that will come out in a couple months. Mm-hmm. So I think that will be an interesting report for you. I'm sure you'll be interested in what that says. My job, though, really isn't so much the financial condition or sustainability of the initiatives that you have going. It's more centered on whether this document is accurate. Is this meeting the technical requirements of the GASB, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, that sets the rules about how you account for things and put this document together? And as LaVon already mentioned, we were able to do our job and give you, the city, a clean opinion. In layman's terms, we call it a clean opinion. The technical jargon is an unqualified opinion. We didn't have to qualify it for any issues or conditions or errors that we that were left in the financial statement. So as I go through these remarks, I know I've got some findings to talk to you about, but I'd like to keep that in perspective that at the end of the day, we got to the ability to issue a clean opinion on the city's financial statements. Now, I've got a couple things to go over with you. Clearly, the nature of services we provided are reports, and there are some required communications. And I know that might be hard to sit through, but our professional standards say there's certain things that I need to communicate to you. You have a letter in written form, so I'm not going to go through all of that, but I'd like to hit on just a couple of those highlights. So to start out, I want to make sure that you know we issued a letter to you that asserts our independence of the city. As you know, years ago when some of our brethren in the audit world were getting in trouble with some of the services they were providing, we work really hard to make sure we're independent of those that we audit. And we have an internal quality control process to catch that. So when we're asked to do other work for the city outside of your audit, we have a process to go through to make sure we meet our technical independence requirements. And LaVon's shop requires that we consult with her so they can weigh in on whether we can take on a project and not impair our independence. So we're asserting to you that, in fact, we are independent. We haven't taken on any services that would cause doubt in that regard. In terms of the audit, so what did you engage us to do? You know, you've got a number of component units that you're all very familiar with, but you engaged us to audit all of them. So there's the Portland Development Commission, which issues its own audited financial statements. We audited Portland Development Commission. Hydro issues its own financial statements. We did an audit for Hydro. The Fire, Police, Disability, and Retirement Fund also is audited separately, and we perform that audit. And then obviously the city puts it all together. So not only do you you have a separate audit and financials of the city and its various funds, it pulls in all these other component units, and that's this comprehensive annual financial report. So we audit. So you engaged us to do those audits. Within an audit, you know, I like to break it down into about five components. Some you may know very well. Maybe some of this is not so obvious. But clearly, we have an obligation to independently test the numbers and the disclosures that appear in this. And you know that we're in here, we're looking at source documents, we're talking to third parties like your bank, your folks that hold your debt, and so forth. So we're looking, doing the testing. You probably have a pretty good understanding of that. A second phase, though, is that we're required to look at the internal controls that your finance staff use to make sure that they're capturing this information accurately. So what are the checks and balances to make sure that you can capture this data accurately? We have an obligation to determine if those controls are designed effectively and are they being followed? Have they actually been implemented? So that's the second phase. You are an Oregon municipal corporation. That means you've got just, as you know very well, a ton of state laws that you're required to follow. But the state auditor says to audit firms, if you're going to audit an Oregon municipal corp, there's about six or seven laws that we have to test your compliance with and then report on that. The largest thing is your compliance with local budget law, as an example. Public purchasing, local budget law, the deposit of cash and investments, are you meeting state laws there, and a few others, and we'll talk about that. A fourth area is, since you receive federal grants, we have an obligation to test your compliance. A lot of these federal grants come with compliance requirements that are outside of the financial statements, and you're obligated to put in place internal controls to help you with those compliance requirements. So our job is to test those controls and also test ultimately for compliance and report on our findings, and we'll talk about that in a moment. And then finally, a fifth phase is that you're fortunate in that you have an accounting staff that has the knowledge and experience to put this document together. There's, 1,500 some odd governmental organizations in Oregon. Probably maybe 10 or 15% are able to put this document together in-house. The rest are engaging their auditor or another party to actually put the document together. So our obligation is to test it. Is it consistent with the audit work that we did, and is it meeting all of the technical requirements? So that's the nature of what we did. So let's talk about the results. So I already talked about the fact that you got a clean opinion. So again, we want to keep that in mind, even though we have a couple of things to findings, if you will. But I think you've gotten a clean opinion, Yeah. So you clearly have a good set of people and experiences to capture the city's financial statements in good order. That said, and remember I mentioned that we have an obligation to look at your internal controls and to tell you if there are weaknesses in those. Well, we had four weaknesses in internal controls that rose to a level that we're required to communicate to you in writing. Three are called significant deficiencies. So they're significant enough that we need to report them to you in writing. And one was severe enough that we call it a material weakness. So that's a more difficult one, or one that was more problematic. The material weakness stemmed with or covered your capital assets. There's a, you are involved in a number of intergovernmental agreements, and there's one that you had with TriMet over a light rail project. And as you know, you work very well with your partners to do these projects. There was a technical aspect of one particular agreement that was difficult for you to determine when do you book the assets that ultimately you were going to be responsible for maintaining once the project was completed. And unfortunately, the city booked about $30 million of capital assets in 2009 before you were really on the hook to be responsible for those. They were still under construction with TriMet. TriMet was running and managing that project. And the city just jumped the gun in terms of when it recognized its portion of that project in your financial statements. The agreement said that when the project was done, the two of you would come together and come to an agreement about what portion you would be responsible for and when you would take possession and go forth. And unfortunately, that asset got booked before that point in time occurred. So that was an area where we had a pretty significant adjustment required, and we put that as a material weakness.
Did that have any practical outcome?
I'm not sure.
In terms of changing the numbers?
Yes, your 2009 financials actually recorded that asset on the balance sheet as an asset of the city, and it really didn't technically meet the requirements at that point for you to recognize that. So it's a timing issue only. When this project is done, that asset will come on your books, but you just jumped the gun in terms of recording it on your 2009 financials when it wasn't ready yet or didn't meet the technical requirements to be recognized at that point. So your 2009 financials were in error to the tune of about $30 million on that project.
It was a project cost, so that
correct.
Wasn't like we hadn't spent the $30 million on something else.
Right. It's clearly not anything inappropriate. It's a timing issue. It's a technical issue as to when that gets reflected in your financials. Clearly, it's not a project administration problem or anything else, or noncompliance or incorrectly spent dollars. None of that. It's strictly a timing issue of when the accounting standards would say you need to reflect that in your financial statements.
Thank you.
A second area was what we call a significant deficiency, deals with payroll. Recording payroll, recognizing payroll liabilities in your financials. As you might know, you implemented SAP accounting software a couple years ago, and in 2009 and 10 fiscal year, you implemented the payroll, the human resource management module. I think the HCM is the acronym for that. Basically, it is the system that calculates your payroll. And unfortunately, in the implementation and design of that, there were postings that were happening in your accounting that were not clearing out in the normal course. And so you have liabilities on the books that were not legitimate, and they just weren't clearing out as payments were being made. And so adjustments were found to be necessary there over the payroll. And I believe that's something now that your technical accounting is working on has made improvements. A third area just deals with classification. Again, it's not an error in the ability to reflect cash investments, debt, correctly in the books, but where it appears on the financial statements. You know, you have a classified financial statement, which means it's important to recognize when an asset is cash or near cash, that we call it a current asset, and when is it a non-current asset. And same with liabilities. We found a number of reclassifications that were required within your cash and investments between current assets and non-current debt that was reflected as current debt when it was really long-term debt. And then finally, within the net asset classifications, some adjustments that were required. And so we labeled that a significant deficiency. And then the fourth area was over some HUD Section 108 loans. We found some loans that the city had issued where you were responsible for repayment, and those were not reflected in your financial statements, in your general ledger, and those needed to be put on the books. So there was a control deficiency that led to those not being recognized. And again, that's a difficult area because there are some HUD Section 108 loans where you don't need to put them on your books. You're not responsible for repayment. But when you are responsible for repayment, meaning the city, then obviously you need to have that debt reflected on your books. And I think there were three loans that were not, in fact, recorded. Some incorrect decisions about who was really on the hook for repayment is what led to that. So those are the control deficiencies that we identified. With regard to state legal compliance, the Oregon minimum standards that we need to apply to your audit, we had two areas where we found non-compliance. One was over expenditures. In the footnotes to your financial statements is a listing of about three or four funds that had actual expenditures beyond the legal appropriations which you had set for those funds. And so we need to comment on that. And the other area that we identified, which is a little bit problematic for you, is in interfund loans. What the state statutes say is that if you're going to borrow money from one fund to another, you need to have approval for that in advance. And usually you do that through resolution or ordinance. And we found a number of interfund loans that did not, in fact, have a resolution or ordinance approving those. And then also the statute says if you do have a loan outstanding at the end of the year, you need to budget for the repayment of that in the ensuing year. And we found a number of instances where repayments of interfund loans were, in fact, not included as a budgeted appropriation in the ensuing fiscal year. So that happened coming into 2009-10 and again coming into the fiscal year that you're in now. And this is a problematic area for you. You know, you've got a number of grant programs where you're able to bill the federal government, but you've got to carry that until you can collect cash from the federal government. So you've got to pay your bills, meet payroll, and so forth. And so you've got a grants fund that needs some working capital. And its cash balance will go negative while you're waiting for reimbursement from the feds. And the state views that as an interfund loan. So I know we're working with your staff on what some possible solutions might be or how to handle that so that you're not burdened with, you know, all these requests for approvals for interfund loan every time a grant program needs some advance funding. So hopefully they'll come to a practical solution to bring to your attention to address that. That was our Oregon legal compliance. A question?
Questions or comments from council? Additional comments from anyone else on the panel? Madam Auditor, did you want this report accepted, or is it just a verbal report?
I think it's just a verbal report.
Great.
For you and the public.
Thank you.
We have the full copies. Sorry.
Yeah.
You should have.
We have a summary in our books.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. We will, if we're not already, we'll get on top of those issues.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to do a quick, I appreciate your forbearance. We're going to do a very quick emergency ordinance. Can you please read the title for 387?
Authorize the sale of 9 single-family houses located in the Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Area to Renew Kenton Homes, LLC, and approve tax increment funding to benefit income-eligible first-time buyers.
Commissioner Nick Fisher.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor, the title is self-explanatory. We're pleased to be joined today by former County Commissioner Serena Cruz Walsh. Serena and her husband, Tom Walsh, Jr., are trusted partners of the Portland Housing Bureau, helping us meet a number of our citywide goals. Today, Director Van Vliet, in under 1 minute, will explain the action item. And the reason we need your action today is because we cannot close without your approval. Director Van Vliet.
Thank you, Commissioner. The item is fully explained in your materials. What I would highlight for you is that we own a set of single-family homes. We want to sell them and get them into the hands of home buyers. We've worked out a financing mechanism that's been fully vetted by our Housing Investment Committee, our loan committee, which you authorized to do those actions. So it's a little bit of a complicated structure. We're going to make an acquisition and construction loan and a permanent loan, and part of it will be repaid, and part of it will stay in the homes. And the homes will be sold using a land trust model through Proud Ground. So I think I will just kind of leave it at that in the interest of brevity. Happy, of course, to answer questions.
You concur, Commissioner? You like this?
I concur. You guys have a very busy agenda. You don't need to hear from me. We're grateful, excited to be working on it. We think it hits all the policy high notes of green, affordable, and more diverse than anything we've done before. So we're very excited to work with you on making this project happen and getting families housed in these great homes in North Portland.
Well, thank you. Anyone wish to testify in 387? Carla, can you please call the vote on 387?
Fish.
Mayor, Renew Kenton was selected because of their experience, because of their utilization of minority contracting and for their green approach. These homes will be sold to first-time homeowners through Proud Ground. Proud Ground has a track record in our community of over 100 new homeowners, not one foreclosure in the history of their organization, so they know what they're doing. And these will be in the main, more affordable than most of the market rate homes in an area that needs more affordable homes. So thank you. Thanks to Jacob Fox, Carl Dinkelspiel, Barbara Shaw, Carrie Hernandez, Connie Buckley, Siobhan Badeau, Andrea Mathiason, Trin Tron, Linda Law, Art Hendricks, who actually was stolen away from us by Parks, which is actually, it was theft from my own one bureau that I run to another bureau. So there was no actual defendant in that crime. Mike Johnson, Paul Stewart, Kathy Milliken, and Marlo Medahin, and Director Van Vliet, thank you. Aye.
Saltzman.
Good work. Aye.
Leonard.
Good. Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
I'm going to have some new neighbors. Aye. I live in Kenton.
That's
thank
right.
you. All right. That returns us back to our regularly scheduled programming. We are back on consideration of item 390, and we're about to continue into public testimony. Is that right?
Yes.
And we do have courtesies of the House for former city elected officials. So former Commissioner Gretchen Cafori and two others, please.
Thank you.
Can you call two others? Welcome.
Thank
it's very nice to
thank
see you.
Thank you for the courtesy.
You bet.
Hi,
Dan.
Hi.
Hello.
I appreciate the courtesy. I wasn't expecting it. I've been sitting quietly and listening.
It is our courtesy to you.
Thank you. Walt's actually going to, my partner at the Portland Plaza is going to go first.
Well, thank you. My name is Walter Grebe. I live at the Portland Plaza. I'm an attorney with Schwabe, Williamson, and Wyatt, but they have nothing to do with this comment. These are mine. I really just want to talk about about the way we've been treated and the fee that is being charged against us. When we first were brought into the condominium or brought into the Clean and Safe, we met with the Clean and Safe board, and we were told immediately by the chair that, in their opinion, we did not pay enough, and that we should pay far more. As we dug into that, we found that we are paying far more than some of the businesses that we think are the direct beneficiaries. For instance, Nordstrom's pays $20,000. We pay $36,000. That strikes us as being an inappropriate ratio. And Macy's pays $19,000. Again, we pay $36,000. So we think that it's an unfair analysis. We think that the budget or the formula, whatever it is, and we can't really figure it out, but whatever it is, we think it's unfair, and that perhaps an easiest way to do it, if you don't want to just exempt the condominiums, which I would appreciate it if you would do that, but if you don't want to exempt us, I think perhaps a fair allocation would be maybe one-third of what the major downtown retailers and other businesses are paying. We get nothing. We don't get anything close to the benefits that the major downtown businesses do.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you. Bear with me. I don't think it's longer than 2 minutes. So why am I here today? Frankly, because of my history with the BID, the BID. Phil Calver and Sandy remind me that I have been around a long time, and that is true. I have also been a resident of the Portland Plaza for 20 years and a downtown resident. So I find politically and personally in the past that I've made some assumptions and decisions that I now conclude may be incorrect. I am assuming I have standing in the court today, to coin a phrase from my lawyer friend, but the issues do involve housing and fairness. Back in the day when this all began, the idea was very, very simple. We had a map, we drew some lines, the boundaries. We had a projected budget and operational budget of which services would be provided by Clean and Safe or the BID. And then we had a formula on how we would raise enough money to sustain the operations. Seems simple, yes. Over the years, as the resolution clearly details, there have been a lot of changes, a lot of rethinking of this process, including the fact that some major assumptions have been made. One is that everyone who was within the map would pay something. It wasn't just a business district, as Phil Calver explained when it originally started. It was no longer just that. It was that everybody who had property in this area within this map ought to pay something. And as it evolved, which you've heard plenty about today, 2 years ago, this council decided to mandate that downtown condominiums participate with these dues that Walt has described. So what's different today? And beside the fact that I've had a major course correction in my thinking internally, one is that you're being asked to reaffirm the district for another 10 years. When you talk about the map, the context of expansion is only within the area. I'm sorry, I don't know. Is my time up?
Please continue.
I'm sorry, I wasn't watching it.
It's okay.
within the expansion that Skip Frank outlined will only take place in the context that it's economically feasible for sustaining the services that are currently provided. There is reference to the fact that the condos, all of us have different feelings about the fees, and it does say, I believe, that the fees may be adjusted, but it has to be revenue neutral. And at one point, it suggested that the condos should agree, the condo owners, and frankly, that won't happen. I'm assuming, I'm making another assumption here, that the budget is needed, and certainly you, Sam, I'm sorry, Mayor Adams, you had...
Call me Sam.
I didn't mean to be presumptuous in the least. We have heard plenty of good work that is done by this district, and it has made a great improvement downtown. But the questions I'm asking you today are really more philosophical. One, who should be mandated to contribute to the formula? Why are residential properties included? If they are, might there be a fairer way to assess these properties? Two, have we slowly over this evolution and chronology drifted from the original purpose of the district? And are we sure that these services can only, this goes to the budget, can only be offered by Clean and Safe? And thirdly, are we basically reaffirming today that decisions made in the past cannot be challenged or questioned? And I would ask, where should that decision be made or those questions be raised? I believe this is a political beast. It was created by the City Council. And all the taxes, excuse me, we now call it a fee. The fees are collected by the city revenue officer, and all these changes that have been detailed are approved by this council. So I do believe that you are ultimately the arbiters and the decision makers in this issue. I do not in any way mean to challenge the integrity or intent of anybody who's been involved in this. These are my friends on diverse sides. I am simply asking the council to ask some different questions that may lead to different answers. And in an uncharacteristically a not typical move in my retirement years, I would offer to work with any of you or be part of any activity to ask and hopefully answer some of these questions as we move forward. Thank you very much.
We have to clear any such appointments through County Commissioner Deborah Cafori, but we'll get back to you.
I know, the poor dear.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you all.
Thank you, sir.
Wonderful to see everybody.
Good to see you. Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. All right, Carlos.
The next three, please come on up, are Wendy Rame, Robert Wright, and Brooke Buxbaum. And they'll be followed by Kirk Kenward, James Warner, and Jane DeMarco.
Hi. Thanks for your patience. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Please begin.
Good afternoon. My name is Wendy Rame. I'm here with other residents who are willing to stand up in support of the renewal of Clean and Safe and the expansion of the Clean and Safe program for our 12-block neighborhood west of the South Park blocks. As a downtown resident, I have watched my neighborhood's livability decline in contrast to the other side of the park blocks. The border between the area covered by Clean and Safe and the area without their services has become clearly apparent. This contrast is largely due to Clean and Safe's good work. I live on the wrong side of the tracks. The wrong side of the tracks includes several churches and small businesses, the Safeway, and major residential buildings. On my side of the border, we see rampant use of drugs and drug dealing, aggressive panhandling, and trash and other unmentionables left behind by street vagrants. Aggressive panhandlers, some with dogs, create a scary gauntlet in front of the Safeway and in the parks. These are the street conditions we see on our side. These conditions very likely contribute to an increase in empty storefronts. Renewing our and extending the clean and safe services will help us on the west side keep our streets cleaner and more secure, will help address alcohol and drug-related homelessness and aggressive panhandling, and very important, may help make the area more attractive to potential commerce. It will promote a collective 12-block approach to solving these problems rather than the piecemeal, siloed approach that exists now with just three or four buildings hiring their own security services just for their properties alone. That approach is just not working for our neighborhood. Although the clean and safe services will not be a cure-all, I believe that the additional costs we residents will incur is a much-needed investment in the neighborhood's livability at a time when city coffers are stretched. I urge you to support both the renewal and the expansion of Clean and Safe. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Sir?
My name is Robert Wright. I own and live in a unit of the Elliott Tower condominiums at Southwest 10th and Jefferson. I want to thank the council for the opportunity to speak on the important decision you are now facing. I retired and returned to my hometown of Portland, Oregon 5 years ago. My wife and I, both Portland natives, looked forward to living in a vibrant, diverse central city. These expectations have been met, but not entirely. Since I left for a globe-trotting career in 1966, downtown Portland has definitely been revitalized. However, safety and livability we have experienced on public sidewalks in our immediate neighborhood has declined over the last few years and brought into question our decision to live our retired years in downtown. My neighbors have had the same experience. Some have moved from the neighborhood. The Safeway store right across the street from our building is, on the one hand, a very convenient place to shop. On the other hand, it is an attractive nuisance, a magnet for problems. Street people congregate around the store's entrances for reasons other than shopping, some of them being illegal. The dense foot traffic is attractive to some, either for panhandling or as cover for illegal drug transactions. My wife and I witness and encounter this frequently. Some of the photos you just saw in the Clean and Safe presentation were taken from my front room living room. Safeway and its neighbors have been unable to effectively mitigate these negative impacts on our neighborhood, which come with a cost: stolen goods, lost business, and an intimidating street corner. My wife and I shop there less frequently, and some of my neighbors have stopped shopping there altogether, rather than running the gauntlet at the entrances. For property owners in our neighborhood that can afford it, separately contracted security and patrol services have had some positive effect. However, this patchwork approach has fallen short, especially in blocks adjacent to us. With local budgets and police bureau resources stretched very thin, now and into the foreseeable future, an additional, cohesive, and integrated security patrol system is much needed. My wife and I and many of our neighbors support the expansion of the Business Improvement District to include our neighborhood, and I urge the City Council to approve this proposed expansion. And Commissioner Fritsch, I respectfully offer to answer, further respond to the question posed to Mr. Frank on that picture that you addressed, if, with your permission.
Thank you.
What's missing in that, and I'm not a security officer, but I did buy a better camera, is the white powder being exchanged for green dollars. You have to be pretty quick and have to have a video camera to catch it, which I have on occasion. The most obvious thing is that violates the Americans with Disability Act provision of the sidewalk management plan, a more minor aspect of it. I'll give you a short story. About a year or so ago, I was witnessing that on a sunny day with about that amount of people and saw the exchange of drugs for money right out in the broad daylight. I impulsively and not too smartly grabbed my camera, went right down in amongst them, and took pictures. Two of them fled immediately. I took the pictures, and with narrative of those photos, I sent them to the central precinct. That resulted, with probable cause firmly in hand, a result of one of those people with 40 packets of cocaine in my front room area. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Wright. I appreciate your clarification, because obviously the drug dealing is not illegal. The standing on a sidewalk is completely in compliance with the sidewalk management plan. If people are on foot and able to move at the request of somebody with disabilities, then they... So that was why my question was that they weren't actually sitting down in the wrong place. They were just standing, which is allowed.
Well, thank you, ma'am. But I've been talking to the Central Precinct officer to some extent since I first moved into the West End, and I've been informed of those that patrol the streets that why would you, on earth, would you try to sell drugs on a bright sunny day with people coming in out of Safeway for cover? More people, it's hard to pick out who's doing what. It's like a shell game, and I've witnessed it daily.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am?
Thank you. I'm Brooke Buxbaum, speaking on behalf of the Elliott Tower Board of Directors, which unanimously supports the BID expansion. I have a letter from the board to convey to you and would like to present some highlights from it. We need the enhanced security, cleanliness, and livability that Clean and Safe would bring to combat the deterioration in our neighborhood. We recently have had potential condominium buyers walk away from the deal after touring the neighborhood and finding homeless campouts, public urination, graffiti, road warriors ringing the entrance to Safeway with their dogs, and commandeering the park blocks between Salmon and Main with attendant obvious illegal drug use. The Elliott needs the bid to protect our owners' financial interests in the value of their property, and we all need the bid to protect Portland's public investment of urban renewal funds in this area. We need the bid to provide better security and cleanliness for all of the properties in our neighborhood. It is only through this collective approach, blanketing the entire area with services, that improvements can be made. The Elliott can secure its own boundaries and keep its own sidewalk clean, but we do not want to be a castle with a moat around it. We want to be part of a neighborhood that is clean and secure and pleasant for everyone. We need every property participating, and we need the bid to achieve this public goal. We all want to have a vibrant, pleasant, diverse, and safe neighborhood where everyone feels comfortable. We need people to want to live there and enjoy living there. We need the bid, and we need the City Council to support the proposed expansion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you all for your testimony. I appreciate it.
Next three are Kirk Kenward, James Warner, and Jane DeMarco.
And after this panel, if just for the sake of time, it's a request, not a mandate. If you've signed up and your point has already been made, then it would be great if you could defer, although if you want to and repeat it, you're certainly allowed. But if there's a new point that hasn't been raised yet regarding any of these issues, please stay signed up. But we have a number of things yet to work through today after this agenda item. So your any help would be appreciated. Mm-hmm. Sir?
My name is Kirk Kenward, and I'm chairman of the board of Sixth Church of Christ Scientists, and I represent my congregation. Three of those pictures up there were pictures of my church. We share the park blocks, a block with St. James Lutheran Church. And the church has a development center for kids and kindergartners that walk around the streets and in the park blocks. I like to address seven short topics. One is finding needles weekly around my church. These kids walk by these needles. I'm surprised that nothing's really, they haven't picked them up. I work as a drug and alcohol counselor at Kaiser. And I'm real familiar with these. I pick them up and I put them in the sharps. I take them to the hospital, put them in the sharps. I used to give them to the police, but the police are not showing up. We had an addict OD in our front steps during a Sunday service. The homeless are defecating and urinating on our steps daily and around the block. They're leaving incredible messes of broken beer bottles, urine-soaked clothes, cardboard, and spoiled food that has caused an expensive cleanup and rat problem that we're having in between our reading room and church. I had three rats it was about a month ago, run right under my feet. Number four, stealing. Someone stole all of our handles off of our doors on our church, and we went to the police and didn't get much help at all. They stole our signs, our trespassing signs, to get the police to come in and have a permission to clear the doorways. We have three members that are 95 and older and literally terrified to attend our services at night. Graffiti never ends, and the thing, it's bankrupting our church. Police seem to be busy elsewhere. We have no recourse but to beg the homeless to clean up after themselves for fear of retaliating against us. At the very least, give us a bathroom to stop the unhealthy spread of urine and fecal matter. We need it in these park blocks. We have a beautiful college that's the biggest college in the state, and people walking by, it's something that needs to be put in the park blocks. Mm-hmm. My father, John Kenward, loved this city and started the Portland Development Commission under Terry Schrunk, and was mayor, and would be sitting here advocating this service for the city that he loved.
So you're in favor of the expansion?
Yeah.
Great. And thank you for your testimony, and we have to do better.
I was at the Downtown Neighborhood Association a couple of nights ago, and they are scoping out possible locations for our loo. So we're certainly aware of the challenge.
Sir?
Yes, my name is Jim Werner. I represent the Benson Tower, which is in the area of the expansion. I'm president of the HOA there. Just before I talk about that, I really don't have anything to say about the previous one except for one thing that Commissioner Gaforian brought up. You talk about redoing the bid. I don't hear anything about having any kind of other companies putting a bid in for the same services. Has that ever been considered? That's the only thing I'm going to say about that. We were lucky enough to have our annual meeting last night, and we did pose the Clean and Safe Edition. At this point in time, the way it is being proposed to us, both our membership on the board and all of our residents in the building are voting 100% against it. We are not saying we don't need something, but what we are saying is you're coming at us with a cookie-cutter approach. You're coming at us with a program that works for the downtown retail core. That's not us. We are different. The whole area is different. I think each time you go away from the downtown retail core, you have to change your model. The model you have now wouldn't work for us at all. And, even Skip Frank mentioned that they'd have to change hours of operation. You know, downtown core, you've got people down there to stop shoplifting and the things that go on, muggings and pickpockets and things like that. In a residential neighborhood, crimes happen after midnight. Criminals like the dark. They don't like to work in the sun when they don't have to. So that's it. I don't want to take up too much time. Thank you.
I appreciate that. And if on behalf of your HOA, if you could detail other suggestions, that would be good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your having some kind of hearings on this, because the other thing I find is up where we are, hardly anybody even knows the bid is coming.
Fair enough. But if you could also, doesn't have to be pretty, but just detail some of the services that you would find valuable, that would be great.
Sure. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Hi.
Hi there. Thanks very much, Mayor, and hello, Council members. My name is Jane DeMarco. I'm the Managing Director at Lan Su Chinese Garden, located at the corner of Northwest 3rd and Everett Street in Old Town, Chinatown. I'm here representing 22 employees and 21 directors of the board. Lan Su is a cultural destination for local, regional, national, and international visitors. Last year, we had 150,000 visitors come through our gates. We have over 4,000 members who visit multiple times to the garden a month. We are considered a Portland gem by the locals. We are a must-see destination for out-of-towners. We are one of the many icons which makes Portland, Portland. Clean and safe is a resource we use and one that we need. In the busy warm months, we average 7 calls a month to Clean and Safe to come and help us deal with people out on the streets or in our entry plaza, which for safety reasons our staff cannot handle. We use them continuously for removing graffiti from our tempting white walls, and we are thrilled that they're there to keep our neighborhood streets clean of litter. We love the street presence for wayfinding in the summer months, because sometimes our garden's hard to find. Clean and Safe is trained to diffuse, handle, and resolve troubling situations. I'm in the process of visiting Chinese gardens all around the United States and Canada right now, and not many cities have a Clean and Safe. They rely on 911 calls and scheduled police personnel. My experience is that Clean and Safe is fulfilling a much-needed role in Old Town Chinatown while saving reduced police resources for high-level public safety situations. Given the lack of mental health care, the support services for the growing homeless population, an economy that is unable to attract new businesses to Old Town Chinatown, we believe that the present neighborhood issues that we're seeing would be a huge deterrent to visitors and locals who would like to come to Lansu Chinese Garden if it were not for Clean and Safe. We do appreciate that since the 10 years that this was started, things have changed in Old Town Chinatown, including a really lively nighttime situation on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And I'm sure that Clean and Safe have a huge cleanup jobs the following day. So I concur that your hours need to be looked at, the services need to be looked like, and probably a hierarchy of priorities in this upcoming opportunity to revisit it. However, we do recommend the continued funding of Clean and Safe and thank everyone responsible for its creation operation.
Thank you. Thank you all for your testimony. I appreciate it.
The next three are Doug Montgomery, Lily Mandel, and Erwin Mandel. And they'll be followed by Veronica Renard, David Fulmer, and Daryl White.
Well, welcome back. It's nice to see you.
Thanks, Sam.
You may not think so afterwards.
It's all right. Either way, Mr. McGovern, you are next.
We always feel that way.
Some of my concerns have kind of been addressed, so I'll keep it really short. I manage a residential apartment building in the proposed area that may be annexed to it. As I understand it, the problems that I would have with it is the hours I need it. I hire a private firm, and they come on at 10 at night, and they stay till 6:30 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Those are the hours I need it to happen. Coming on at 7 in the morning and leaving about the time things are going to start doesn't really work for me. The other thing is they're dedicated to my property in the sense that they walk my garages along with the perimeters. They walk my hallways. When areas of that building need to be shut down for the night, they make sure that the people are out of there and it's shut down. I wouldn't be able to get that service with Clean and Safe because I understand they're not allowed to enter a property.
That's a good point for us to continue to ponder.
And then also I will add that I was notified of this proposal. I've never heard anything from anybody involved with Clean and Safe that this was up for, and maybe it was just me, I don't know, but I heard about it from a private security firm that works in there that's at risk of losing the contract. Okay. That's the only reason I know about it.
So we need to do a better job of outreach.
And none of my apartment dwellers were aware of it except four that I asked about it, and they were unaware of the potential.
Thank you. Ms. Mandel.
Yes. Hi, I'm Lily Mandel. I find something very, very interesting about this. Because we live in a rental, we were not notified at all. Doug found out they already had assessed it. It seemed to be a fait accompli, and there's a map already for the extension. No one bothered to let him know about it or the tenants get in on it. I find this discriminatory, really, and I don't like the process. And then we hear someone saying, oh, we're not going to vote on it now, don't worry. And I hear this other big spiel of already being set up and being set up and giving wonderful opinions and stuff, and we haven't had a say at all, pro or con, and why we do or do not want to be part of it. It really is infuriating because this is not the Portland way. I'm not used to that. This does not happen. People all are invited, no matter if they own condos or not, if they're for it or against it. I don't like it at all. I say in no way is this the Portland way.
Thank you for your testimony. Sir, Mr. Mandel.
Erin Mandel, I go with her. Your resolution that you propose is rather confounding. The title of the resolution includes expand the boundaries of the district resolution, as if you're going to vote today on the expansion of it. Of course, the body of the resolution doesn't conclude that. It simply says, I forget what it said, but it said just to continue and in the future. If the analysis supports expansion, the Revenue Bureau should include the expanded area in any PCC 606 code changes brought forward by ordinance of City Council. Got to clean up your act a bit, because this is what has gotten us very upset. According to reading the title for the resolution, today was going to be the vote on expansion of the district. No public hearings have been held. No one has been consulted. Other people apparently knew about it, as my wife and the building manager said, we heard about this last minute, that it was even up for expansion. It's not working properly. Secondly, about clean and safe. Good heavens, you need them for another 10 years. I've been involved with clean and safe, I think, for about 17 years, PPI. In fact, long before the Portland Business Alliance was the Portland Business Alliance, and you may remember, Mayor Adams, it was the Association for Portland Progress who really founded the whole thing. I have the PPI, the patrol people, on my cell phone on speed dial as I walk down the park blocks and through the central city. And believe me, I've used it many times. And every time I do, there's a bicycle officer sent out very quickly to clean up the problem, whether it's an alcoholic, drug dealing. I also have the non-emergency phone police bureau on my cell phone on speed dial. There are problems they can't handle. Now, the odd thing about the district is it ends right now at the west curb of the park blocks, not across the street, so that the Christian Church is not included in the district. Neither is our building. It ends only at the park itself, on the west curb of the park. It seems like a good idea and a very necessary thing. I see the same things at Safeway, and my wife and I see it as everyone else does. And it's a bloody horror. Let's do something, but let's do it in terms of a reasonable process where people get a chance to have some input into what goes on. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for your testimony here. Commissioner Saltzman.
Mayor, I have to recuse myself from this vote because I have an ownership interest in property within the bounds of the Clean and Safe District. So, and I also have a family Passover obligation, so I'm going to leave at this point.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think the points raised about the title will, if staff could work on some amendments to the title so that more accurately reflects the way I read the body and thus the substance of the evaluation, it says, should evaluate the benefits and costs of expansions of the district. If the analysis supports expansion, then the Revenue Bureau should include the expanded area in the code changes that will be brought back to council. But that's separate from the issue of outreach. Sounds like we didn't do a good job on outreach. And then on the other, just to allay fears that any sort of decision is being made, it's should review the need for a cap on district fees for cultural institutions and change to the fee formulas for condos. So that will be part of the evaluation moving forward. But if staff would work on the necessary amendments to the title, where did staff go on this issue? Okay. All right. Pencil that in, and let's call the next three.
Next three are Veronica Renard, Bud Coe, and Dave Williams.
Thanks for your patience.
They'll be followed by Mary Morris, Jerry Knopfman, and Richard Leonetti.
Great. Sir, would you like to begin?
Sure. I'm Bud Coe, also at the Benson Tower.